We're up to our long-distance dedication, and this one is about kids and pets and a situation that we can all understand, whether we have kids or pets or neither. It's from a man in Cincinnati, Ohio, and here's what he writes. Dear Casey, this may seem to be a strange dedication request, but I'm quite sincere, and it'll mean a lot if you play it. Recently, there was a death in our family. He was a little dog named Snuggles, but he was most certainly a part of... Let's go start again. From coming out of the record. Play the record, okay? Please. See, when you come out of those up-tempo goddamn numbers, man, it's impossible to make those transitions. And then you got to go into somebody dying. You know, they do this to me all the time. I don't know what the hell they do it for, but goddamn it, if we can't come out of a slow record, I don't understand it. Is Don on the phone? Okay, I want a goddamn concerted effort to come out of a record that isn't a fucking up-tempo record every time I do a goddamn death dedication. Now, make it, and I also want to know what happened to the pictures I was supposed to see this week. This is a last goddamn time I want somebody to use his fucking brain to not come out of a goddamn record that is, that's up-tempo, and I gotta talk about a fucking dog dying.
Welcome to the after party.
Curl your hand around a frosted glass of podcast. This is the Bob and Chez Show.
The after party with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Did you hear the story about these guys and the Republican National Convention?
Cheap Trick? I read something about Joe Walsh in the convention.
Joe Walsh and now Cheap Trick, apparently. Both were offered gigs performing. Joe Walsh almost got fucked.
Yeah.
Because he was offered to play some sort of gig for vets, and it turns out that it was a GOP convention.
That's right, yeah.
And he backed out.
Yeah.
And now they apparently offered Cheap Trick a bunch of money, and Robin Zander said they didn't take it, and then he said, no, you know what? We should have taken it and then come out with guitars shaped like swastikas.
That's why I love these guys.
Well, Cheap Trick's still good. I'm still basking in my Prince afterglow, though, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's, of course, more news on that. Welcome to the after party, Friday, April 22nd. We're going to talk about Prince a little bit. There's some developments on that front. And, God, I mean, I guess another week when we have a mass shooting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I read about that this morning.
Mass shooting.
It's only seven people, though.
Yeah, it wasn't a typical mass shooting. Yeah, it was just seven people, five children in Ohio.
Yeah, I mean, it's only seven people and five children. That's fine.
Yeah, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is America.
You gotta
seriously, like, after Newtown, they gotta step up their game.
That's right.
The lunatic fringe, the heavily armed lunatic fringe in this fucking shithole of a country.
Right.
Step up your game.
Yeah, absolutely. My God, if you're going to do a mass shooting,
make it
big.
You know what sucks? Like, I joke about it, but after Virginia, and I don't want to get deep and dark here right off the bat, but after Virginia Tech, you know, I wrote something about that. I wrote two things. I wrote something about Max Turner. Who was one of the victims. I didn't know her. I was looking into the history of the victims, and she happened to be when I worked for CNN, she happened to be the first person I started with, and there was something about her that struck me, and it just knocked me flat.
Yeah.
This whole idea that, you know, this young girl, you know, not young girl, but, you know, young woman went to school. That's all she did. She did. She died for it, along with all of these other people.
Yeah.
But that's
the thing we talk about with regard to Sandy Hook all the time, is that these were educators, for God's sake, teachers who used their bodies as human shields. I mean, that there's a tragedy in the whole idea of educators and people wanting to be educated getting gunned down like this.
Yeah, I know. But I wrote two things. I wrote one thing about Max, and then the second thing I wrote was when NBC News ran the Sung-Wee Cho pictures, which I thought was fucking reprehensible. Fucking reprehensible. They were the only ones who got them. They could have given them to the FBI. Nobody sees them. You know, it wasn't. They weren't in danger of you know, losing out on the scoop. Nobody, you know, they wouldn't have gotten one-upped. That was it. The whole thing was in their hands, and they decided to run it. And Steve Kappas came out and gave this you know, basically turned himself into fucking a pretzel of logic in an effort to justify why he ran that.
Yeah.
And it was just disgusting and despicable. And I said at the end of it, I'm like, you know what the problem with this kind of shit is when you glorify the fucking killers, there's always somebody out there thinking, you know what, I can kill 24 instead of 23.
Yeah, absolutely. And what this did too with the release of those photos as it completely distracted from the actual issue itself and turned it into, well, let's talk about the movie Old Boy. And it was all about Old Boy. Like, is Old Boy somehow a negative influence? Is that causing people to shoot other people en masse in college campuses and so on? And I remember writing about that going, no, this isn't the thing here. It's not about the movie Old Boy. Because you remember the shooter was photographed holding a hammer like the whatever it was, a movie poster for the Japanese film Old Boy.
Yeah.
That then got turned into an American movie. And I'll never forget that. But in Ohio,
it's Takeshi Miike.
Yeah, exactly. And in Ohio, today,
most worthless remake ever, by the way. Not a bad movie, just unnecessary.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, you know what? Here's a weird connection to that movie and to a bunch of fucking movies. The producer of that movie, and in addition to that movie, also The Ring and several other similar horror movies that came out around that time, were all produced and acquired by my former manager. I had a talent manager in Hollywood. His name was Roy Lee, and he produced all those movies. In fact, I'm going to look him up. He's like a big deal now. And it was weird because I was one of his first clients as a talent manager right around 2000 during the dot-com era when I had done the Napster Bad cartoon and all that stuff. And I signed with Bender Spink, which is now a pretty big management company now in Hollywood. And Roy Lee was with Bender Spink at the time and became my manager. Roy Lee has gone on to do what he's working on right now. He's working on the Minecraft movie. He did the Lego movie sequel. He's doing the Lego movie sequel, the Lego Batman movie. Let's see. He did the Poltergeist remake. He did Run All Night. He did
The Poltergeist remake was so bad.
I know. He did the.
Holy shit.
I know.
Even Sam Rockwell couldn't say that.
I know. It was like unintentionally funny, from what I heard. He did the 2014 Godzilla, which I couldn't see, and he did the Lego movie. He was the producer on the Lego movie. How to Train Your Dragon 2 is another one of these. Old Boy in 2013. Jesus Christ. And I knew him way back when. It was Roy Lee who taught me about Los Angeles, because the first time I went out to Los Angeles, it was Roy Lee who showed me around and showed me how to drive in Los Angeles, which probably was not, he was not the best instructor, because now I drive like a maniac in Los Angeles. He's one of these guys like, you know, that sketch on SNL, The Californians.
Yes, The Californians.
He was the one he's the reason why I find that sketch so funny, because he's all about the alternative driving routes to get around
always
the traffic.
Dude, but that's like that there has never been a perfect sketch in terms of skewering everything that is Los Angeles.
Oh, I know.
And that, it's so beautiful. God, I laugh at that every time.
I know. And it's just like the main thing for me is always
to the 405 down to the 10. At PCH.
Yes, and I love that. I love that because that is exactly what happens.
My favorite part of that sketch is when Josh Brolin is like the doctor with the Hawaiian shirt and the flip-flops on, says you've got cancer, and look, you know what, you should go to this awesome cancer center out in Santa Monica, and you know what, honestly, the parking's great. They've got this really great parking lot right across. It's so fucking
awesome. And it is so Los Angeles. Los Angeles is all about how to get from one place to another.
It is. And where to park when you get there. I swear to
where
God.
Where to park. Yes, because I mean, that was one of my big lessons in starting to go to LA, which I started to do around year 2000, 1999, 2000. I started to go to LA quite a bit. And it was always a harrowing thing before GPS became a thing in cars or on handheld devices. I was always late for meetings because I was always like, I don't know where to go. And I would get stuck.
Did you have a Thomas guide? Everybody out here before GPS, everybody had the Thomas guide.
I didn't have the Thomas guide. I just had a map. I had just like an unfolding map that I would look at and I would sort of put the directions together, line by line, that I would have just on the side and I would reference it. But of course it was never, no matter how many directions you have in LA, it doesn't matter. If you end up like on Olympic between 4 and 7, it's going to take you 2 hours to go from Santa Monica to West Hollywood or something. It's just going to be like maddening, because best laid plans of mice and men, no matter how well you know the route, you're going to get fucked by the traffic in LA. And that's the whole idea behind knowing all of these weird little things. Like, I always laugh whenever they say, and the Californians, whenever they say, Little Santa Monica.
Yeah.
Which, as an outsider, you go, well, that's not even, what is that? I don't even know. That's not even funny. I don't get that. But, of course, Little Santa Monica is the smaller,
earlier version.
Runs, yeah.
It was the street that runs parallel to Santa Monica Boulevard.
That's right. It's almost like an access road.
Yeah.
It's parallel to Santa Monica.
Runs through Beverly Hills.
Exactly. Exactly. So, if you want to get around the traffic and some of the lights on Santa Monica Boulevard, you take Little Santa Monica.
Right.
As I was cracking that up, because I remember driving around with Roy Lee, going back full circle to what we were talking about before. I remember going around with Roy Lee and having him speeding down like Little Santa Monica at like 60 miles an hour. And me in the passenger seat going, God, I hope I don't die.
The thing is, it's impossible now. We shouldn't sit here and talk about traffic patterns in LA, but dude, it's impossible. there are so many people here now that, like when I moved out here, when I first moved out here like 20 years ago, it's been that long. There were at least, like, I used to make the joke that like by 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, you get on the freeways and they were pretty clear. They were relatively clear.
Oh yeah.
And now it's like, dude, now it's like, oh, look, here's the midnight traffic jam.
And that's what's crazy. I mean, there's I think twice, because I started, we're really getting deep into this, but I started abandoning Santa Monica as a place to stay. I used to go to Santa Monica all the time and stay in Santa Monica because it was close to MTV and I was doing a show at VH1, so it was convenient. But then once that went away, it was like, I don't have to stay in Santa Monica anymore with all this traffic and congestion, all that bullshit. I'm just going to start staying in Burbank. So I started staying in Burbank, but what that meant is to get back to the airport, I would have to leave like, an hour and a half before I'd want to get to the airport, because
the airport is down south and technically, not really on the west side, but my idea of the west side is like really the west side is anything west of the 405.
Yeah.
And they're like, look, Jackie Schechner, man. Jackie lives out in Santa Monica, not all the way to the beach, but she is west of the 405.
Yeah.
And the entire time that she's lived here, I've seen her like 4 or 5 times.
Exactly. She might as well be
and
in another state.
It's been years. Yeah. I love her so much. And I still like going. That's not really true. I've seen her more, but like gone out with her. Like she comes over. She'll come over to go to SoulCycle in Hollywood. So I'll see her then. But like there was a running gag for the longest time. And another friend of mine from CNN, a friend of ours, mutual friend, who moved out here. I've seen her all of twice.
Yeah.
In the entire time that she's lived here, because fuck, dude, I'm not driving all the way out to Santa Monica, all the way up past the 405. Then I'm gonna have a couple drinks and you don't drive drunk in LA. You will get popped.
Exactly. And you know what? It's funny you mentioned that, no matter what time you leave, there's always gonna be traffic. Because no matter what time you leave to go see your friends, you're gonna get stuck in traffic if you have to go that far. The farther you have to travel in the Los Angeles Metroplex, the more likely you are to run into just the worst snarl you've ever seen in your life. And that was always the case with me when I'd go to the airport, when I'd leave Burbank to go back to LAX, and I'd go to get to the 405, and I forget what exactly the highway that you take from Burbank to the 405, but at that intersection,
101,
the 101, I would get to that intersection and it could be 4:30 in the fucking morning and there would still be a backup at that intersection. 4:30 in the morning. So it's like, Jesus fucking Christ, I've left 2 hours before I want to be in the airport, basically 4 hours before my flight, and there's a chance I might not make it because the traffic is not moving.
Oh, yeah, no, it's
infuriating.
You know, I live near Burbank.
Yeah.
And so I gotta keep waiting for an excuse to fly out of Burbank. Mm-hmm. I used to fly out of Burbank all the time. It was so nice.
Oh, good luck.
Oh my God. It was, but yeah, now it's more expensive because they know that people want to fly out of Burbank.
Right.
And it only goes to certain cities. And it's just like, please. Just
well, didn't I tell you?
I just want.
I mean, I think I told you, like the last time I flew out of Burbank and flew back into Burbank to go to the Podcast Awards last year. It was almost exactly a year ago, in fact. And I flew to Las Vegas and nearly died on the flight there. I mean, the winds were insane landing in Las Vegas. There was the worst turbulence I've ever seen in my life, I've ever experienced. There was like, you know, it was just like one of those things where I thought I was going to die landing in Las Vegas. And of course, everything was fine. And then when I flew back to the Burbank airport, to Bob Hope, Bob Hope Regional or
something like that.
That trumped it. That was far worse as far as turbulence goes. I mean, there was one point where we're flying over whatever part of Hollywood, you could see it down below, and the plane just literally must have dropped like 100 feet, like in a second, where everyone sort of like lurches up in their seats and things move all around in the plane. That was terrifying. So good luck. Good luck next time you fly out of Burbank Airport. It's convenient, but it's deadly and terrifying.
I want to get out of here this weekend. I want to leave so bad.
Fucking go to...
Because I live in like the North Hollywood area. And
go to Palm Springs, man.
It's the Armenian...
Yes.
Weekend.
Yep.
It's the Armenian genocide weekend.
Yeah. So it's our Armenian weekend.
They've got like, they're on like corners, they're selling t-shirts with like the symbol for this thing is like, it's like a drawing of an arm that's been sliced open and like scrawled in blood. It says our wounds haven't healed or something like what? That. Our wounds are still open.
Oh, because of the genocide.
Yeah, it's still, but yeah, 101-year-old genocide.
Yeah, right.
And you know, they've got the flags all over their cars, and it's just, and by the way,
yeah,
genocide, Glenn. The mm-hmm. genocide, the Kardashian System of a Down in the entire city of Glendale still exists. Not a very successful genocide.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, it's Glendale. It's like Glendale is sort of Armenia West.
It absolutely is.
Yeah, that's sort of I've heard a lot about the Armenian population.
Yes, there is a very large Armenian especially. Population yeah. here.
All
and
right.
I'm sure that some of our Armenian listeners are going to give me so much shit. And so you know what? I can't wait for the Twitter responses from anyone whose name ends in IAN.
Well, you know, if you're going
to save
do that,
yourself the trouble, there's no one here to fire me.
Right. But I mean, the least you could do if you're going to complain to Chaz about what he said about Armenians in Glendale, or either of us for that matter, send us some extra gold chains.
Or
at least
a late model European sports car. So sports sedan, pardon me. So it's like the Armenian mobile is usually a black Mercedes with like tinted mm-hmm. windows. They've got it's a long sleeve you know they look like Niko Bellic from Grand Theft Auto 4. They got like the sort of super tight like thin like black t-shirts with yeah. long sleeves.
And they all smell
and Armani jeans. They smoke. Yeah. yeah. And Armani jeans. Like Armani, like not Armani Exchange, but like Armani jeans. Almost as if they confused the word Armani with Armenia. And they think that's what it says. Oh, and white leather shoes.
That's right. And they all smell of they all smell of Drakkar Noir.
Drakkar Noir. It is basically the living embodiment of Drakkar Noir.
Right. Oh, my God. Well, now that we've pissed off Armenians, I mean, we're not all Armenians. I guess that should be the hashtag that goes along
with
this.
Not all Armenians.
Not
hashtag,
all Armenians.
Not all Armenians.
Just the Glendale-type Armenians. The oily bohunk Armenians. All right. Let's get into a little bit of politics here, and we're going to talk about Prince. And when I say a little bit of politics, it's basically a little bit of Trump, because there were several funny Trump stories today. First of all, I think the biggest revelation that isn't really a revelation is the fact that they're basically admitting that Trump during the primaries has been an act.
Yeah.
That he's going to shed for the general election, if you believe that.
This is the thing that scares me.
Yeah.
This terrifies me because I kind of hinted at it in a piece that I wrote. A piece on Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton that I wrote yesterday, where Trump is going to dupe the idiot fucking lapdog political media. He's going to by setting the bar so low. Throughout this entire campaign, all he had to do was come out and be somewhat magnanimous for suddenly the narrative to change. And suddenly it's, ooh, is Trump being serious? Is Trump being serious? And if you start hearing real legitimate news organizations parroting that fucking bullshit, guess what? His unfavorability rating will drop.
Yeah,
it will.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's got plenty of time to turn his fucking image around. And if the lapdog media buys into this bullshit that he's selling, that will be a real problem.
Right. And don't forget the existence of a new context. As soon as the general election begins, which it'll begin in about, you know, if it hasn't already begun, just in a vague sense, it'll certainly begin in June. And with that context where you have, it's no longer Trump, Cruz, Kasich, Rubio, it's now like potentially Trump, Clinton. And then what happens there? Everyone starts looking at Trump in a different way because they're comparing him to her.
Exactly.
And so basically this story goes that, I'm just going to read the part of the article here. From Philip Rucker, Dan Balls, and Robert Costa. They wrote, the two new leaders of Donald Trump's presidential campaign sought Thursday to reassure nervous Republican Party leaders that there is a path to victory in November and that the divisive billionaire mogul will be able to transform his image to win over the general electorate. Trump's chief strategist, Paul Manafort, told members of the Republican National Committee in closed-door briefings here Thursday afternoon that his candidate has been playing a quote-unquote part, that's an actual quote, a part on the campaign trail, but is starting to pivot toward presenting a more businesslike and presidential quote-unquote persona. He gets it, Manafort told RNC members. The part that he's been playing is now evolving into the part that you've been expecting.
Astonishing. It's astonishing that he's admitting it's all bullshit.
Yeah, the negatives will come down. The image is going to change, but quote-unquote crooked Hillary is still going to be crooked Hillary. So basically what we're hearing now is, and what sets this apart from other previous presidential campaigns, presidential frontrunners, is that, yeah, sometimes when you go into the general election, you moderate your positions. Right. You don't change your character. Donald Trump is changing his fucking character here, and they're admitting it. They're saying that he's been playing a character and that that character is going to become a different character in the general election. I hope Republicans are fucking reading this, and I hope Republicans are furious. Although, knowing Republicans, they're going to be like, well, that always happens. But it doesn't always happen. It's all about, again, going back to what I said, it's all about moderating positions where you take, you know, on the Republican side, you take a more conservative approach during the primaries, and then you drift a little bit to the middle for the general election. Now, someone like Mitt Romney hardly did that at all. But the fact of the matter is that Mitt Romney during the primaries was basically the same Mitt Romney that we saw during the general election, just different talking points. This is the difference. Trump, again, they're just admitting that he's playing a character, and this is why it's so unprecedented. Just due to the very fact that they've admitted it, and that, number two, it's really not going to make any difference among Republican voters. Like, well, as long as he wants to make America great again, just click, vote for him right there. And that's exactly how it's going to work out. None of this stuff is going to come as a surprise to any Republicans, even though it should. And I think that's one of the real tragedies here, is that things have become so cynical, especially on the Republican side, that someone like Trump could absolutely get away with just playing a character. The Republicans have been watching characters on Fox News Channel for years now. Sean Hannity is a fucking character. Of course he's a fucking character.
Right.
You think Sean Hannity has any core values? Same with Glenn Beck doesn't have any core values. Donald Trump, likewise, doesn't have any core values. He goes whichever way the political winds blow.
Yeah.
And that's what he's doing here. That's what he's done all along. So I guess in that respect, I guess this is politics as usual for the Republicans. That's probably what the Republican voters will say.
I mean, it's absolute bullshit.
Yeah, it really, really is. And You know, again, all things being equal, in a normal, sane election cycle, this would be big news. But it's just like, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course he's playing a character. It's Donald Trump. Of course he's doing that. Meanwhile, headline here in Mediaite, Baltimore Sun reporter quotes Trump supporter named Jack Mehoff.
Yeah.
Internet spits coffee. Yeah. Is it to the delight of fifth graders everywhere, the Baltimore Sun, and clearly this show as well, the Baltimore Sun has set the internet on fire by publishing a report on a Donald Trump rally in Maryland that featured a quote from a Trump supporter with a, shall we say, extremely suspect moniker. Now, again, this is published in the Baltimore Sun, and it writes, Jack Mehoff. That'd be Jack and then M-E-H-O-F-F. 19, praise Trump as a hardworking, smart individual that wants the best for all people in this country that are allowed to be here. I love that qualifier at the end. Jack me off.
Yes.
Wants to qualify that he wants the best for people except the people that don't belong here. They can go fuck themselves. So that's that was that. Meanwhile, Trump also came out in support of non-discrimination laws. I thought this was interesting. Then immediately got attacked by Ted Cruz for doing it. Ted Cruz saying Donald Trump is bowing to the PC police by saying that, well, you know, if you're transgender, you should be able to use whatever bathroom you're comfortable with, whatever bathroom you choose. He said North Carolina did something that was very strong, very, very, very strong. And they're paying. He didn't use repeated varies that time. I just added that. And they are paying a big price and there's a lot of problems, responded Trump. North Carolina, what they're going through with all of the business that's leaving and the strife. And that's on both sides. Leave it the way it is. There have been very few complaints the way it is. People go, they use the bathroom that they feel is appropriate. There has been so little trouble, he said. You know, he added that I think that would be discriminatory in a certain way to make it so that transgender people can't go into the bathroom of their choice. Yeah, I think it was really fascinating for him to come out and say that. Because obviously it's going to piss off his base. And it also, of course, pissed off Ted Cruz, who released a campaign ad, which is there's nothing to play here on the show because it's all text. But it's basically like, oh, yeah, Donald Trump wants to make it legal for guys to dress up as women and watch little girls in the bathroom. Do you want your little girl being leered at by a perv dressed as a woman? And that was the Ted Cruz ad that came out today.
He's and of such course, a dick.
Of course, that what he's describing in that ad is totally illegal and will always be illegal. It's always going to be illegal for you to dress up like a woman and go in the ladies' room and perv out on the other people there or molest children or whatever other fantasy the Republicans have about this that they're pulling out of their brains. Because it's certainly not happening for real, which is one of the things that Donald Trump said. So that's starting to permeate the Republican campaign as well. The whole bathroom business. I still can't get beyond how obsessed the Republicans are about this thing that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
There are zero confirmed incidences of both cities and states with non-discrimination laws and people exploiting those laws in order to perv out on little girls in the ladies' public bathrooms.
Yep. And again, 0.3% of the population.
0.3% of the population. Exactly. So this is the scourge that's preoccupied the Republican Party with their weird, you know, porn fantasies or whatever the fuck they're thinking of when they talk about this crap that doesn't exist.
Jesus.
Anyway, okay, you know what? Enough fucking politics. Let's talk about fucking Prince and follow up with some things that have occurred in the time since then. It was evidently an overdose on Percocet. Is that the story?
Is that the I didn't see the press conference. Is that what they said the answer was?
Yeah, I thought it was
because TMZ was saying that a few days before there was an issue with Percocet, and I haven't seen the picture, but there's apparently a picture of Prince, which is just an oddball image to imagine. Prince kind of like pacing and sweating outside of a Walgreens.
Yeah, Prince walking into a Walgreens.
Imagine that.
And then getting into a black Cadillac SUV. But I mean, the fact that did Prince actually walk into the Walgreens and like go up to the counter and say,
according to what I heard, yeah. And again, please don't quote me on this because I listened to reporting on this in the context of a story about TMZ earlier today. And I think they said something like he sent someone else in and he stayed outside and was kind of pacing back and forth and looked very antsy, which, by the way, as somebody who's, you know, I don't mean to cast aspersions, but as somebody who has been a heroin addict, pretty much. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much your behavior when you desperately need opiates.
Yeah, yeah. And here's the TMZ story. It says,
but you're not throwing up.
The TMZ story goes like this. It says, Prince had OD'd on Percocet days before his death, and he ingested so much, EMTs had to administer a quote-unquote save shot at the airport where his plane made an emergency landing to save his life. Sources in Moline, I guess that's how you pronounce it, Moline, Illinois, tell TMZ Prince's entourage told responders he had taken the painkiller after his Atlanta concert, which triggered the emergency. Percocet is a painkiller which contains a combination of acetaminophen and an oxycodone, an opioid. It is highly addictive, of course. We're told Prince was taking painkillers for a hip problem. We're told he had corrective surgery for his hips in 2010. I mean, he's in his 50s. As we reported, Prince went to his local Walgreens four times in the week leading up to his death. TMZ got a photo of Prince in the parking lot of the Walgreens hours before he died. Witnesses say he was pacing and agitated, waiting for someone to bring out his meds.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, look, that'll do it.
That'll do it. I mean,
And painkillers are dangerous as shit. That's why doctors, and it sucks that this happens now, because if it turns out that's why he died, if it was some kind of OD on Percocet, I fucking hate that.
Right.
I hate that because, first of all, it's such a sad way for him to go out. That's first of all. Yeah. Secondly, because again, that causes damage because that gives doctors and the general public this idea, especially it gives doctors this idea that, you know, they already have clamped down on opioid painkillers.
Yeah, right.
Which I understand why they do it, because they are dangerous. They can be very, very addictive.
Sure.
But holy fucking Christ, I hate the fact that if you go to a doctor now and you really are in pain and you really do genuinely need something that works, you'll get the runaround.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when I hurt my shoulder, I managed, you know, I got, and this is about the standard doses. They give you about 10.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, they'll give you about 10 that are 5-3-25. So it's 5 milligrams of Vicodin, 3-25 of, you know, acetaminophen. And again, it's good, it works, and I'm glad it works, but the only time the only time recently that I have ever been in a position, and this is even after they started having the really bad issue, the epidemic of people abusing painkillers. Mm-hmm. But 10 years ago when, God damn, Jesus, what's the date today?
Today 22nd? Is 22nd of April. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know what? In 4 days, it will be the 10th anniversary of the tumor surgery for me.
Wow.
But one of the reactions that I had to the tumor surgery when it finally got pulled out was I got shingles, and fucking shingles suck.
Jesus
shingles
Christ.
Are so fucking painful.
Oh yeah,
and that's the only time I've ever had a doctor just go, here's 110 milligram Vicodin. Take as many as you need.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, thank you so much.
Yeah, and you know, I'm trying to look up here while we're talking how many Oxycontin that Rush Limbaugh took a day. And I want to say it was like he was taking an insane number of oxys a day, like 20 or 30 from what I remember.
You can get away with 20 or 30 20 or 30 pills.
Pills.
Yeah. The most I've ever taken is 30, I think 30 milligrams.
Yeah.
Which is strong. And that's more than enough to get you through the day.
Yeah.
More than enough. I think that if you're taking, you know, like I think I remember an episode of House or something where he talked about how much he was taking. It was like 70, 80, 90 milligrams a day, which is a fucking insane amount.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is. It's a ridiculous amount. And obviously it caused Rush Limbaugh's death. I mean, not death. I mean, we can only dream. His deafness, which was a side effect of all of that. And but it was a lot. I mean, he was taking quite a few from what I remember per day. And he would just buy giant bags of them from some woman out in a parking lot somewhere. I think it was his maid or something like that, from what I remember. But anyway, right. Yeah, I mean, it's dangerous stuff, but I mean, it's something that I think is also important for pain management. There are a lot of people who have chronic pain. Right. Oh, he was taking as many as 30 OxyContin pills a day.
Okay. That's fucking. I mean, he's a big guy, but that's batshit crazy.
Yeah, it's fucking insane.
Like, I don't genuinely. I mean, I used to do heroin and a lot of it, and I don't. That's enough. I mean, that's so much that it's very hard to imagine truly functioning that way.
Right. I mean, it's got to get to the point, though, like any other drug, where you have to take that many just to get to get the high. Because
that is very, very true. Yeah. But I'm definitely
you end up chasing it.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Dude, trust me. I know. Yeah, that's it. Exactly. You wind up you're constantly trying to sort of retrieve the high that you used to get off of very, very few. But I mean, look, if you do enough, Oxy, Vicodin, basically any kind of opiate, you eventually fade out. You know, pretty much go into twilight. You know, you take the Z train to Snoozeville.
Yeah.
You know, you go into sort of like a twilight phase.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, Michael Jackson was on. No, he wasn't on any painkillers. He was on some sort of tranquilizer, wasn't he? He would take like tranquilizers, and in order to sleep, he had to take tranquilizers like you would use to go under anesthesia.
Yeah, that's crazy.
In order to fucking sleep, Jesus H. Christ. Meanwhile, Wonkette did something that both delighted me and pissed me off. It delighted me because it was fucking hilarious. It pissed me off because I wish we had thought of it for yesterday's show. As you may recall, in yesterday's free show, we talked about Wolf Blitzer's funny little gaffe on CNN yesterday, talking about Prince.
It's only beginning, Don, to set in that Prince is dead, that he's not going to be around. And he's been so active over all of these years, writing music, performing, soundtracks for major motion pictures. All of us, of course, remember Purple Haze and what that did for the world of music.
And what God, that did just, for the world of music.
He's stretching. He's just fucking stretching.
I know.
And the sad thing is he just does. Oh, no.
Yeah. And everyone's, you know, I mean, I guess it's on one hand, it's funny to hear it. But I know why it happens because of course you do. I could never deal with the shouting producers in my ear while I'm trying to talk. Like giving me direct instructions while I'm speaking. Like that, there's that scene in Broadcast News where Holly Hunter is feeding William Hurt all those lines during the special.
Well, you don't shout in people's ears. Well, you do have to get in there and talk to them.
Yeah. But while he's talking, it's just like, I don't know how you coordinate those two things.
I've seen people who, one of the hardest things to do as a producer is to get, I mean, one of the hardest things when you first get to a new place is to feel out your anchors and to feel out your talent and find out what they want. And especially since fucking anchors are a bunch of bitchy little girls. Yeah. You know, they're the ones. Well, you know what? Actually, things have changed because we don't have like the billion-dollar anchors anymore. Yeah. At least, you know, you do it like at like national level and cable level, but in local, you don't. But still, the anchors are the ones who kind of rule the roost. And you'll always hear like, oh, so-and-so likes this when you do this or when you don't do that to so-and-so. And, you know, part of me was always like, look, fuck you. You're going to do what I want you to do.
Yeah.
But you do have to sort of learn a little bit. And man, I've met people who make a bloody fortune and like you have to like wait until the other person's talking to tell them anything, or you have to give them one word commands, you know, stretch, toss, you know, that kind of thing. Go to black, you know, go throw to commercial, that, you know, as few as possible. The one guy, though, motherfucker, man, Rick Sanchez, you could get in Sanchez's ear and read him Shakespeare while he's talking. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't even, if you were watching him on TV, you wouldn't even know.
Yeah. He could completely turn down what's being said in his ear and focus on what
he's
saying.
You could just say to him, Shepard Smith was the same kind of guy.
Yeah.
You could basically get in Sanchez's ear and just be like page 57 is dead. We're going to have to go to page 58 next. You know, the Lynn live shot isn't there. Kill it. Move on past that. Go to weather. You know, that kind of shit. And like, Rick's just talking away, ad-libbing about whatever the fuck, reading off his goddamn teleprompter.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's an extreme skill. I mean, it's one of those things that only comes, I think, with your 10,000 hours. Once you get that 10,000 hours, like Malcolm Gladwell writes, you have the 10,000 hours, you can pretty much get away with anything as you're...
I've told more people this. You know, Sanchez has such a fucking, you know, such a divisive rep. You know, there are a few people who like him. There are a hell of a lot of people who think he's a fucking raging blowhard or whatever. But honestly, one of the best goddamn anchors I've ever worked with.
Yeah, right.
In terms of he's himself, which, by the way, is a hugely important thing to be. You know, he's just who he is and doesn't really worry about that. And that actually makes him a surprisingly decent communicator. And when it comes to sort of working with him in a newsroom environment, he's a fucking blast. He's easy as hell.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
And he's good at what he does. He's great in terms of reading. He's the kind of guy who, when something goes wrong, he doesn't try to, you know, he comes right out and says, you know what? That we tried to go to that video. It didn't work. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to do this. We're going to come right back after this. Okay, we'll see you then. You know that? Like a producer I used to work with joked that Rick demystifies television.
Yeah. Well, he's such a natural. Yeah, it makes it look so easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's, you know, there are some who are just who've got the natural talent. Other people, I guess, and it's the same with radio, which is how I'm able to even talk about this, not having done television hardly at all. You know, it's either comes naturally or it takes a lot of practice to get that coordination going, to separate the two halves of your brain between what you're hearing and what you're saying. It's not an easy thing to coordinate. But along those lines, here are Wolf Blitzer's top 20 favorite Prince songs.
According to Wonkat.
According to Wonkat. Number 23, Get Off. number 22, Hey Wendy. Yes, Lisa. How do you call your lover boy? I say, come here, lover boy. That one. Number 21, Nothing Compares to the Way She Moves. Number 20, Thriller. Number 19, Diamond Dogs. Number 18, I Would Do Anything for You. Number 17, Let's Dance. Number 16, Two Tickets to Paradise. Number 15, Diamonds Are Girl's Best Friend.
And let's remember that anytime you see in this list written out, anytime you hear a two or a U, it's of course written with a two and a U.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, Wolf Blitzer here mistaking a Eddie Money, Money Man. That's right, Eddie Money.
That's right.
Eddie Money song for Prince song, Two Tickets to Paradise. Number 15, Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. Number 14, The Naughty One About Sex. Number 13, The Purple People Eater. Number 12, Darling Mickey, You're So Fine You Blow My Mind, with the U replacing the word you. Number 11, I Wanna Sex You Up. Number 10, I'm Too Sexy. Number 9, Raspberry Fields Forever. Number 8, Deep Purple. Number 7, Hangin' Tough, or was that the Backstreet Kids? Number 6, To Be With You. Number 5, Butterfly Kisses. Number 4, The One That Starts Like, and a 1 and a 2. No. Number 3, Everything I Do It For You. Number 2, Little Deuce Coupe. And number 1, of course, is Purple Haze. So
awesome.
That was pretty funny from Wonkat today.
That was.
All right. One thing we touched on, I think we mentioned. No, I actually, you know what? I don't think we mentioned it all yesterday, because I think it would have been somewhat disrespectful on the Prince news front. Is that I'm not sure if you were aware that he was a chemtrails guy.
I had heard that.
Yeah, he's there's
well,
a.
Look, you know what?
Prince, he gets wide
Prince
latitude.
Is a fucking
right?
Eccentric.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who believed all kinds of weird shit. So, you know what? I'll let it slide. Put it this way. Prince was not the kind of person – Prince was not someone who held a seat in Congress. He was not someone who did a weekly podcast or radio show or showed up on cable news all the time. Yeah. You know what? I'm not saying that holding that opinion isn't amazingly stupid, but at the very least, he wasn't really out there really circulating it.
Yeah, right, right. Well, yeah.
And he again, he believed a lot of other really oddball shit.
Well, yeah. And I think if you watch the Kevin Smith story on YouTube, Kevin Smith talking about Prince on YouTube, It's obvious that Prince was trapped in for way too long in Prince world. And, you know, as many celebrities, of course, especially recording artists who, you know, who are pampered, very wealthy, generally get what they want, and they get accustomed to that lifestyle in a certain way. It kind of brainwashes them. And Prince was no different. He was a celebrity who was, you know, who in some ways fell prey to the trappings of celebrity. And that's what goes along with it. Some eccentricities, as they say. And I think of the Kevin Smith story. He talks about how, you know, Prince, like, you know, just in the middle of winter in Minneapolis would suddenly need a camel. Like, can you guys get me someone get me a camel? Yeah. Well, Prince, why do you need a camel? It's middle of the winter. It's January in Minneapolis. And you want to? Yes, I want a camel. Well, Prince obviously doesn't understand that it's right.
Did you listen to the Questlove story, by the way?
No, I didn't listen to the Questlove story.
So, like, I'll do the sort of bare bones version of it. But yeah. he goes to see Prince, mm-hmm. and the Roots were just starting to kind of come up, and he gets a bunch of friends. He buys tickets for him, and he doesn't realize that he hasn't bought a ticket for himself. So he has to call Prince's team, and they get him in. Like, Prince actually gets him into the show.
Wow.
And like halfway through the show, he gets a phone call from somebody on Prince's team, and they're like, Prince wants you to this was in Philly. And he's like, Prince wants you to find a place to do an after party for him and have records there ready to go and basically have this all ready by the end of the show. So he's like, I spend the last like half of this show calling everybody around town trying desperately to see if I can, you know, I cook up with a friend of mine and I ask her to help out. And so finally we actually get a place. Like, I run home, I get my record crates, I come back. It's like, you know what? I'll bet he's going to really like Fela Kuti, so I'm going to put on some Fela Kuti. So he starts playing that. It's like Prince comes in. And like, and oh, and he needed a pool table as well. He wanted to play pool. So they had to hire people to bring a fucking pool table up to like the top floor of this club that they had managed to empty out. And apparently Prince comes upstairs to the DJ booth and he's like, change this. And he's like, so I'm like, you know what? Maybe it's not an upbeat enough song. He's like, so I put another Fela Kuti song on. And he goes, no. He says, shut off the music. Play this. And he gives him a DVD copy of Finding Nemo. And he just wants him to play that on the TVs throughout the place.
Oh my God, that is so fucking...
So he's like, so it's like, it's great because Questlove's like, did I just get fired so that he could play Finding Nemo? He's like, I think I did.
It's like he must have done such a shitty job, or at least according to Prince. Prince is just, Prince, I'm done with Questlove. I want Finding Nemo now.
Yeah. That's it, exactly.
Jesus Christ, that's hilarious. You know, meanwhile, you know, there was no real, at least they posted the whole show, so I wasn't even about to excerpt any of it, but, and it doesn't even deserve extended conversation, but old man Billy Corgan was on Alex Jones this past week.
Oh, yeah.
Looking like he's 70 years old at this point, just a 70-year-old man all bundled up and scarved up, looking just like fucking death. And it's weird with Billy Corgan. For the longest time, he looked like he was always 19 years old. And now he just looks like an old man for some reason. He's just gotten old and gray and haggard looking. And now he's appearing, you know, again, a visionary songwriter. Just an amazing fucking songwriter. Yeah, I mean,
well,
smashing pop.
No, I'm not going to knock his songwriting abilities. I mean, Gish, Siamese Dream, and Melancholy were spectacular records.
Yeah.
And then he went totally off the deep end.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I mean, that's enough. Those three records. Yeah.
If those had been, you know, honestly, if those had been the only three records he'd ever made, and then that was it, he was smart enough to like get the fuck out.
Yeah. Right. But he didn't. He did a lot of other crap that wasn't as good. And
he became a bona fide, raging, arrogant cunt.
Yeah, I mean, totally.
He would do shows where he would, you know, he'd play for like 3 hours and he'd play nothing but like B-sides and like really, really deep tracks that nobody gives a shit about. And when the audience dared to get pissed at him, he'd like stand up there like just openly lecture them and get mad at them.
Right. Well, he went, obviously, at the end of his career here, Billy Corgan appeared on Alex Jones, and on the show, Corgan proclaimed his love of Jones's super male vitality health supplements. Jesus Christ. He was into super vitality male, just like fucking Dan Bedondi. And of course, this gives me an excuse to play this bit right here.
Hey folks, conspiracy theorist and radio show host Alex Jones here to tell you about a brand new diet plan that I've been using, and you should too. It's not a product of the Illuminati, the New World Order, Raytheon, Bechtel, IBM, the Bilderbergs, or the shape-shifting lizard people from outer space. It's a fine product from the folks at Super Vitality Mail, and it works. Say hello to Super Vitality Males, punch yourself in the scrotum diet plan, and here's how it works. For a low monthly subscription fee of $12,000 a month, Super Vitality Male will send you weekly techniques for bashing the living hell out of your balls. Now you might be thinking, ow, that's gotta hurt, almost as much as when Obama uses tiny airplanes and helicopters to move the tornadoes all around. Sure, it might hurt for a few minutes, but after that, your testes develop a resistance to the punching, and they actually begin to manufacture vast quantities of what Super Vitality Male scientists call skinny juice. That'll both increase your vitality and shed those unwanted pounds. Allow me to demonstrate using my sidekick, Dan Bidondi.
I'm InfoWars groom Dan Bidondi, and now I'll punch myself in the scrotum to prove that punch yourself in the scrotum really works. Ow! 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 Yikes! Ow! Ow! I think I have to go to the hospital. I feel skinny already in all of those dings. And Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was a damn witch.
That's right, Dan. You look dynamite. Now go eat your applesauce.
Can I take the cork off the fork?
No, sir. Yes, punch yourself in the scrotum really works. Check out my before and after photos. See that? Sure, you can't actually see the before and after pictures because this is radio. But trust me, I got the documents right here. I'm down to my high school wrestling weight in 60 days, thanks to Super Vitality Male's Punch Yourself in the Scrotum system. Go to InfoWars.com/scrotum and use the promo code I'm a sucker. Order today.
All right, there you go. Oh, thank you for joining us on this week's After Party. And I'm sorry to our... Well, you know what?
F it. I think our After Party subscribers can hear the show now. I think it's readily downloadable now. I think everything is fixed, so you should be okay. But I'm encouraging all of our After Party subscribers that who subscribe through BobSuska.com to go and switch over to Patreon.com/BobAndChez. You can cancel your subscription to BobSuska.com. Go over to Patreon, sign up at the $10 a month level, and you not only get the After Party, but then you also get the... post-mortem show, which is sort of a mini after party that we record after our free shows on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
So you'll get where you used to pay $6 for one show, you're going to pay $10 for three shows, plus of course the free Tuesday and Thursday shows. So that's it. Have a great weekend, drive safely, and we'll see you on Tuesday. Bye.
Bye bye.